Hi, and welcome to episode 2 of Fear the Swan, a Signar War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm Grant.
I'm Cole.
Brent. Simon is here.
Hi, Brent. We got our fourth member. I reached out to Brent about 2 weeks ago, asked him if he was interested in doing a Signar podcast, and unfortunately, by the time he got back to me, we had already recorded episode 1, but we brought him in the rotation for this week and going forward. So, welcome. You want to talk about yourself a little bit? History with the game, playing Signar, etc.?
Absolutely. Way back in the day, I used to play Warhammer, and when we saw that a new steampunk zombie game was coming out, a friend of mine picked up the first War Machine Prime with steampunk zombies before they were even out, and we kind of realized that that was a more competitive version of what we'd been playing at the time. So we played Mark One. I picked up Kador early on, up until Legion came out, and I got to play with dragons. And then we took a couple years off to play World of Warcraft, and 7 years later, or something crazy like that, we came back, and when Mark Two was getting revamped, it was a good stopping point for a WoW, and we went to our local shop, was really, really building up a strong Mark II community when that was coming out. So I promptly traded off my Kador, played Legion for all of Mark II, and the first 6 months of Mark III, till I got tired of beating my head into the wall of Kador jacks that epitomizes the entire Midwest. If you've never seen it, it is literally every third player was a Kador Jack spam list. Decided that Signar can handle Jack spam far better because Haley 2 at the time is just the most obscene caster. And since April of last year, I have not played a game with my Legion since.
And you,
all Signar.
You went to WTC. You played Legion when you were on WTC, right?
Correct. At the time, it was real weird trying to figure out who was going to play what caster-wise. So Trevor Atridge went with Haley Sloan. And by the time we finalized all that, I just stuck with Lilith 3 and Abby 2 since I knew what they did. This year, I'm also going back to the WTC, and may or may not have Signar, probably we will.
I hope so. Because that's all you've been playing, right? So.
Right? Well, it is, 6 months off.
True. That's
so
true.
Does it look like that'll change in the next, 6 months, 7 months?
No, it doesn't look like anything like that'll change. I have access to basically every faction, I think, at this point, if I really needed to.
And then what are the casters you've primarily been playing in Mark III, just if anyone hadn't listened to you on Muse on Minis?
Absolutely. So, surprisingly, my first two casters played in Mark III were Haley, or I'm sorry, were, my first two were was Haley 2 and Striker 2?
Sounds right.
I have played primarily those two, Haley 3 and Kane 3. In fact, the first tournament I took Signar 2, I think, was Haley 3, Striker 2. All told, Striker 2 is probably my favorite caster in the game because he's the best control caster I think I've played, and then he randomly punches you to death.
So, I know we didn't prep on this, and he's one I purposely left off last week when we talked about popular casters, and I'm sure you were shaking your fist, being like, what the fuck, guys? I play Striker 2. But I did that because I know you play him, so do you want to talk a little bit about him? And I know I'm kind of ambushing you with this, but...
No, that's fine. I can talk about him all day. So my first game in a tournament with Signar, and this is an anecdote, but it completely epitomizes why I like Striker 2 so much. I looked at the board and I realized Striker 2 was in was behind a forest, camping zero, which you just never feel right doing in Legion. He had two max units of Storm Lances in his opponent's deployment zone. A Lancer was out there to put out positive charge, and I was upkeeping Rebuke and had D-Cell up. And so obviously I'm living the dream, right?
Yeah.
And I realized my caster was perfectly safe because I was able to keep more distance between me and my opponent than they could physically get to while still putting out D-Cell and Rebuke and positive charge. And I was like, I never want to play another caster. So if you've never looked at it, or if you really look at a spell list, everyone sees the positive charge and goes, I'm going to cast positive charge and I'm going to beat your caster to death in the face. And yeah, he has a really, really good damage and hit buff. And he has D-Cell, so he has a good delivery buff. And then he has random spells that he just has no business having. Rebuke really is good. It's just, hey, you know what? We're two melee armies, but one of us gets to actually charge.
Yeah, you get to do nothing.
And, yeah. He has Lightning Storm. Lightning Storm is the nuke everyone forgets he has until you go, hey, you've got to deal with my army with Kiazi Assassins or Trencher Commandos. Actual example. I'm going to put one arcane-shielded, D-celled Storm Lance in front of your unit of Trencher Commandos, and then I'm going to shoot it in the back with Lightning Storm.
So,
and then they just kind of go, oh, that's a thing. That's, he has, I actually won one game, that probably won't happen again, where I used Disruption on his sword to charge a jack, disrupt it, and then velocity to a flag, and then I had a follow-up to knock his jack down so I couldn't contest.
Nice.
I mean, he randomly has a rate of fire 2 pistol.
Yeah.
It seems like, why would I ever use his pistol? Well, it's because you don't make attacks with them. It's... you have two guys that are just outside of my aiming range. Well, I'll spend one to velocity and take these two pot shots because that's all I need to do this turn. About half my games or more, I don't even make an attack with him.
Nope, he just threats.
Yeah. So barring the Skari one Dark Host matchup where he will go take out a Wraith Engine and then heal for a few and then two turns later take out another Wraith Engine, barring that, he usually just sits there and doesn't even fight. He's just like, hey guys, I'm good. At the time, my Striker 2 list was, basically a battle box plus a Firefly on Junior.
Mm-hmm.
And it currently is 4 to 5 Fireflies and a Lancer, no heavies. It is 100% tuned for the Signar Mirror. Because everything's... I mean, it's obviously a Storm Division. Everything's immune to lighting. And so if you drop Nemo 3, I've got to somehow manage to beat up your Storm Strider with 2 units of Cav, which should be doable. And then if you're running Haley 3, I had a super nice guy at the America's Team Championship who was playing Haley 3, and turn 1... I built my list to beat Haley 3. I want to preface that. Turn 1, I ran all my lances, or 1B, I ran all my lances, 2A. He let me go first because there was a giant corrosion pool. 2A, I ran all my lances up, shot them all in the back with Fireflies, which is the most abusive game mechanic ever, and they really need... I really want to see that change. And then feed it. And he realized, Def 15 is really good, but I'm mat 10, and... Every time I hit something, I probably kill 2 somethings.
Yep.
It's brutal. And then, like, with D-Cell and Arcane Shield, long gunners are, like, doing 6 mans to kill 1.
Yeah. We were playing Recon 2, and he physically couldn't contest one of the zones and my flag.
Yep.
That's how deep the lances went. And it was, let's crank up to 5 on scenario. So yeah, he feels like he's one of those casters where you're like, there's an out here on this card. I just need to find it. Usually that out yeah, go ahead.
I was intrigued by your four Firefly build when I saw it at ATC. And what I'm kind of wondering is, I usually have Striker in there as my armor cracking list. And what do you feel about, you know, something like Nine Slayers with Gaspy 2 or a Harkovich, you know, with a bunch of Marauders? Like, how does that tend to play out?
I would not run the multiple Firefly build if I was expecting heavy armor. It was built for a team format.
Exactly, where you and, can... Okay, yeah. Got it. Okay.
And Keith asked me what I want to duck, and I said everything with an armor buff.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Just across the board. That's starting to become more of a concern in the meta right now, I feel. And I'm leaning back toward my roots. I don't know what happened to the game I started playing, but I'm looking at Striker 2 as a drop into, like, Legion with 30 Weapon Master Swordsmen. And I'm looking at Haley 2 again as a drop into Crix, because Crix plays 12 models now.
Yep.
And I don't know when the two inverted, but they did.
I'm actually bringing Striker 2 to the Sioux, and we're going to get into that. And I didn't do the Firefly build because I wasn't teching it specifically for the same matches. But what if you were... Do you think he has any game still with a Stormwall, or do you think he just wants Lancer and Old Rowdy for the most part?
So, I think... I personally feel that if you don't have a Lancer, you're missing out on a ton of utility on him. You're missing out on a positive charge delivery system, for one.
Sure.
And the other benefit is, with just one Lancer, you can put positive charge on it and throw it away. If I ran it... I'd probably go Rowdy Iron or Rowdy Lancer or Stormcloud Lancer.
Sure. Yeah, that's kind of where I fell too.
Or to be honest, even a couple of Ironclads, if you can find the points, are really good. Ironclads are underrated in terms of the amount of damage they can do, and so are Hammersmiths right now.
The reason I love Striker 2 is because he's one of the few things in Signar we actually have a damage buff that we don't have to take a merc for. And just throwing that on anywhere just makes our already efficient Jags just take him to 11.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I feel like he turns Stormlances up because, okay, if you can deal... A lot of things might be able to chip some damage into Arcane Shielded Stormlances, but when you throw D-Cell on top of that, it becomes... I know when I think it was Captain Con 2 years ago, and I played Sloan into Marc-Andre LeBlanc's... he was playing Striker 2 specifically for that. And I was sitting there, and I'm like, okay, this will be fine. Like, I can take out Arcane Shielded Stormlances with the Hunters, but the D-Cell is, like, what really fucked up the math, where it was like, oh, all of a sudden, I can't just kill, you know, a Stormlance a turn. Plus then his feet, like, and you already kind of want, like, with Storm Division, you already want Storm Lances anyway, and then pause, like, all of the things that he has, I feel, just enable Storm Lances even further.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
In the mirror where, like Cole said, where long gunners want to be leveraged against the Lances, that gives Haley a kind of a poisonous choice of, do you cast Temporal Distortion? Do you cast Repudiate, you know, to get rid of that Arcane Shield? And that still leaves them on Armor 19, which is not trivial. And that seems like a good way to... I think it still functions very, very well in the mirror.
Yeah. His stats, I mean, 16-16 too, man, for, like, no reason. Just...
Yeah.
Like...
Yeah.
So I gotta be honest, the reason I stopped playing Striker is because I always got bloodthirsty with him. Like, I always wanted to, like, just kill the world with Striker. Because you feel like, like Graham was saying, 16, 17 boxes, you can kill whatever you want. It's just in turn not getting killed.
Yeah, Overload, I think, I don't want to say it's a trap, but I mean, he can already do work. Like, Overload's obviously not a trap, but I mean, you just see, I think a lot of people look at his card and they just go, Overload? I can roll three dice and get that to strength? Okay, I'm sold. And there's just so much more to him than that.
Yeah, Overload is the least used ability on his card, I think.
I actually, when you said that Lightning Storm thing, I never even thought about doing that. I mean, I've used it, but never thought about putting a Lance out there and dropping it and being like, all right, send your single wound infantry in here. Like, what are you going to do?
Well, I pick a Lancer because usually he's my Lightning Generator target. Mm-hmm. But I've also done it with just, hey, here's a gap between this force and this building that's about 4 inches wide. I'll put a model in the middle of it, lightning storm it, and now your dreadrots are just there. It's a where do you want to put this razor wall, basically.
Yep. Yeah, and I think most people probably, I think the average player probably uses that spell the least, but I there's certainly a lot more play than first meets the eye when you first look at that and you're like, oh, okay, there's his weird shitty nuke, but it's definitely a lot more than that.
Already using covering fires around flags. You know, that was a common trick back when Stormwall was popular.
Oh, that's true, yeah. Yeah, he was super good with a Stormwall. I mean, he still could be, but I agree. You want a Lancer with him, like, 100%. I don't know, what about a Hurricane? Or does it just not do enough?
I would consider a Hurricane.
Yeah.
I'd consider it, but I mean, do you really want it up? You know, I don't like Colossals being positive charge givers because you often want to use them more strategically. And so I'd rather have a Lancer that can get up in the business itself after you arc positive charge on it.
I've also got a real weird heavy metal list for when Champions rotates with... Let me see. Two Lancers, two Fireflies, seven total Chargers.
Oh my God.
Seven Chargers?
Jakes, a Junior, Gibbs, and a Squire, all in heavy metal. Obviously, like, three of the Chargers are split out on the Juniors, but yeah, D-cell with Chargers, and you have enough focus left over to give, to fully load the Chargers. You're just like, yeah, this works. This works. Take, 14 fully boosted powerful shots.
I feel like I'm talking to Trevor Atridge right now. Like, didn't he do that? Didn't he run?
Positive charger list.
I own 9 chargers fully painted.
Why?
Kane 3 was really fun.
Oh, yeah, because you did. Yeah, that's right. I forgot you were in on that Kane 3 thing.
Also, there are some wacky Siege 1 builds where you can do it.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
If you wrote... diverting to Siege 1 for a moment, when you were talking about how much fun he is,
yeah.
I played a local Heretic player in Grimkin, and I killed 20-something models, 23, I think, before I triggered Shroud.
Oh, my God.
And he was real sad. He was just like, you're still ignoring stealth, because I can't play Shroud, because you haven't killed a single model yet, have you? You've RFP'd all of them. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, explosive. So, really dirty. Yep, Striker 2 is definitely still a excellent caster and still worth considering. Great into the mirror. Great into a lot of things. So, all right. So let's jump into the rest of the stuff. So, Brent, Gibbs, you guys were both at Adepticon. So, do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. I had a slightly different perspective than Gibbs did. So you want to start on your side first?
Sure. Yeah, thanks. So real quick, the format of Adepticon, I really liked their format this time because they did Masters as a two-day tournament and then Champions as a two-day tournament. They may want to flip those because I know that in general, more people were interested in Masters, so maybe it makes sense to have that on the weekend.
I would like to see them flip it. I don't think they are, because their preferred format is Champions.
Okay.
I was discussing with some people on the way up.
Got it. And, you know, and Adepticon's a painting required anyway. So there's a painting requirement no matter what. So, you know, and I know Champions is about to switch to no painting requirement, but it was really, you know, that's not a barrier at Adepticon any more than just going to the con. I think, you know, in general, I had great games. I played 10 games, just a quick summary. Ended up, I qualified for top 8 in Masters, by going 4-0 the first day. And then unfortunately went 1-2, the second day and ended up 7th, which was, you know, it was very close games and a very tight field. And so that was a really fun experience. And then, second tournament, went 2-1 and didn't quite make the cut because of strength of schedule. But we, rather than going through and giving battle reports, I mean, I did, you know, have, there was no bad game, in terms of the opponents were all very awesome. And I enjoyed all of them. And so that you guys don't have to suffer through 10 battle reports, I think what we're going to do is focus on what we learned, like lessons learned and overall observations of the field. And one of the observations that I have is that armor and boxes are very important right now. You know, you really have to be ready to go up against the Zadeshas, to go up against the Nine Slayers, to go up against Maelox. Oh man, yeah, Brett Fogel with four squads of Gators was giving people fits. And Borka 2s, you know, all the beef. So in a lot of pairs, they have an option to take a lot of boxes and a lot of armor. So now more than ever, you really have to think about through what is your approach to that. I felt good about, just a real quick recap, my lists were Sloan 5x5 with the 5 Hunters, 5 Minutemen. And Cray with the, 4 Centurions and Sons of the Tempest with Black 13th
real quick,
debuffs. Yeah.
Can you actually go, we had a lot of people ask about your lists. Can you actually run through them entirely in their entirety?
Sure. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And yeah, I'll say what's in them and basically how it plays. So Sloan is, she's in heavy metal. It's got, 5 Hunters, 5 Minutemen. Then, I'm taking a Squire and Arlen for free. And then Jonas Murdoch is free on Ayana and Holt. So the idea of the list, you've got a couple sources of magic weapon in addition to Sloan's, magic weapon. So it can play into, it can handle, Grimkin in terms of the Gremlin Swarms and that sort of thing. It's meant to have range superiority, of course, and like most Sloan lists. But what the Minutemen do for her is really, one, get pieces that want to be close and want to be up in zones, contesting. And two, it gives a way to get non-linear angles of shots and or flak fields in uncomfortable places. The amount of firepower that everything puts out is pretty disgusting. So you have 27 quality shots in terms of boosted attack rolls, and a lot of them have boosted damage rolls on her feet turn, that are either armor piercing or PAL, you know, 12 weapon master, PAL 14. So it's an enormous amount of firepower in addition to the flak fields, which are 12 auto hitting if you can get base to base. The list gets 2 extra inches of deployment. And so what you want to generally do is go second with the list because Minutemen AD, so they're up on the 18-inch line.
Yeah, gross.
And they have a 17-inch walk, jump, shoot threat. So that means they threaten at the bottom of one, they threatened at 35 inches. Which means the opponent has to either walk 6 or not come, or, you know, or just stay back further than that or be in range of all your guns. The Hunters are like 1 inch less than that. I think they threaten 34 with the extra 2 inches. So essentially, it mitigates the problem with losing the role and going second. You actually want to go second, and you want to choose the board edge that you want, because this way, if they have a defensive feat, they have to decide, okay, do I want to feed at the top of one? In which case, the slowing player can just say, you know what, I won't engage this turn because I'm not, scoring doesn't start yet anyway. And so they've blown their defensive feat in order to basically accomplish no scenario advantage. Or if they don't pop their defensive feat and enter your range, you can then alpha strike with all the Minutemen and the Hunters. And it's a pretty nice way to put them on the back foot, because Sloan's traditional Achilles heel is scenario. And with this list, I do not feel like that's as much of an issue. Was there any other specific questions, Grant, that we've seen on the chat or anything with that particular list?
No, I don't think so. I think we had talked about it, and I think people just were curious what the exact list was. So I just wanted to – I think that was a perfect rundown of it. So.
Yeah, and so I played it 4 times the first day. It was DNC 1 over the whole 2 days of the tournament, but I felt good about it in most matchups. And so I dropped it 4 times and didn't really feel bad about that.
It's a really tough list if you haven't faced something like that before.
Yeah, I think it definitely had its work cut out for it. I played a couple of good Siege 2 players in rounds, I believe, 2 and 3 the first day. And so that was really where it kind of stretched me to play well, because I think Siege 2 has a lot of tools that make that a very good game. And in fact, that's something that we really, when you're thinking about the mirror, thinking about Siege 2 is important, and we'll get into, Brent and Mai's game later. So she handles the mirror generally pretty well. You got to be careful into Gravediggers, either Haley 3 or Siege 2, and you got to understand that matchup well, because they have a lot of game into her. She's really ball busting into a lot of matchups. I think Circle and Legion both struggle to really handle that particular list. The one loss that I had with the list was against Gaston 2. And Gaston was, he has the shield guard spell that he can make a whole unit shield guards, and he additionally has pretty good range threat. And so there were a lot of elements of that list that would seem to counter Sloan well, but I still didn't feel out of it. Like, that seems like a really hard counter, but it came down to very close scenario play. And I never felt like I was doomed. I felt like I just had to play fairly smart. And then the champions list, the Cray is the other list that I get a lot of questions about, just because it's a little non-standard, and that is the Sons of the Tempest. It's 4 Centurions. The solo support is Squire Arlen, and then it has Bastion Falk and the Black 13th, and then Ayana and Holton Murdoch is what I'm also playing in it these days. So the idea is it has, in Ragman. So between Ragman, Ayana's Kiss, and if Falk can rune mark something, it's a +6 damage swing with at least one of your jacks, because you can give magic weapons with Arlen, and rune mark then would trigger off that. Also, the Black 13th do an enormous amount of damage as well. So I try to keep them... try to keep Falk near them, so they can be essentially another heavy wrecker. Because you have 4 Centurions, you can really threaten from a long way, and it's very hard for the enemy to deal with them because they can't charge. So if they're trampling up to get attacks on you, they're usually pretty sad. So a lot of times it can catcher's mitt and then destroy a lot of types of opponents. The downside to that list and the real, what you have to really practice with that is scenario, because against the types of list you want to drop this into, which tend to be, you know, your high armor, lots of boxes lists, you've got to be really careful about not getting outplayed on scenario, because you want to keep the list together to really make your debuffs work well and to have your jacks support each other. And that means you're not fanning out and contesting as easily. And so you've really got to think through your positioning.
Did is that the list you ended up playing into Brent when you guys played?
It is, because that was Champions. And so I had that in a pretty standard Maddox Storm Division list.
So, Brent, I just wanted to get your thoughts. But I don't want to necessarily get into the game quite yet, but what did you think about that list?
I like the list a lot. It can play very far forward and be basically immune to a lot of infantry. Just the inability to charge means it's almost impossible to crack some of that. In general, I like it a lot, and I bought two more Centurions.
I think Gibbs is self-sustaining the Centurion sales from PP. Man. Just I went out and bought two more after I saw it. Like, we know like five other people that went out and filled up their Centurion and Minutemen stocks to play it.
So, I self-acknowledge that I have a problem, but I have basically an entire painted faction of Legion already, and I'm working on the same with Signar, so.
Yeah.
You know, no Signar army is complete without 5 Minutemen and 4 Centurions, apparently.
As it turns out, that is correct for 2018.
It was kind of funny, because the funny thing is I've been playing, you know, mostly on the East Coast, and I haven't really, before this year, I haven't really gotten to travel a lot to the, you know, the middle of the country and over to Seattle. And so I've never really had, you know, my list ideas when I play something wacky, it's usually a fairly localized influence. But it was kind of funny, because at Adepticon, Pete was going to one of the vendors and seeing if they had any Minutemen or Hunters, and the vendor was just flabbergasted. They're like, why in the hell is everybody asking for these jacks? Like, what is going on? Like, it was sending sales ripples through. So the cool thing is they're not easy buttons, they're not I win buttons, but they are very, very fun to play, and they give and I think we talked about this on the last cast, is that instead of being the defensive, trying to answer everything, they ask the questions. And you really feel like you're making your opponent uncomfortable when they look at your list. And I like that feeling. I think that's a very, very good position to be in.
The only thing have you tested it with one less Centurion and squeezing in a Minuteman and... Does Junior work for?
Yeah, you can take Junior and Sons.
You can do Junior. I haven't tried it, just because it's just I've been practicing the style of it. I think that could certainly work. And when the Champion switches to heavy metal, I think I am going to put some Minutemen in, and run it in heavy metal rather than Sons, because Sons won't be on Champions. It doesn't seem like.
Putting that countermeasured Minuteman deep is hilarious to me.
Yep.
It is. I actually had some Tempest Blazers in there for that reason, but I found that I didn't often... it was better to jam my 8 Centurion in there with countermeasures, because he's even harder to deal with. But Arcane Shield would be really nice for the list. I'm just... Where it is, I'm not sure what I'd like to drop or
change. I don't know where you fit in Junior with a jack in that list at all.
You have to drop a Centurion.
Yeah,
honestly.
You would. Yeah,
and I find that the big challenge of the list is the scenario difficulties that we talked about, and just to get it a little bit into Brent and Mike's game. I mean, Brent put tremendous scenario pressure on me, because he went first with Siege 2. And he basically boxed me in and just had everything in a really threatening place, played awesome attrition, and got me down to 2 Centurions and I had to go for something and get lucky. I had to get lucky on his caster, or else he was about to win 5-0. So against a really aggressive opponent that really knows how to jam you out, you can get jammed. So you really have to be aware of that. But the other difficulty is if you're going up against the nine slayers, you have to recognize from the beginning that I have to get more than two slayers for each centurion. I cannot trade even. I cannot even come close to trading even. And so you have to play in ways that tries to deny them getting anything if you can. And that is very, very, very hard. And so if you're going to try the list, stick with it and practice those kind of bad matchups, because if you get a feel for how to handle those, I think it plays well, you know, for the long term. But, you know, you just got to be aware that you'll run out of material real, real fast.
Yeah. Do you guys want to get into a little bit about your game? Brent, do you have anything else Adepticon-wise you want to talk about before we get into that, or...?
So, I'll touch briefly. I started Masters drawing Jason Watt. It was a fun start. Haley 3 into Dreamer. I think that's an advantaged matchup for Signar. Not playing for about a week and a half meant that I was just rusty enough that clock started to become a real issue. And he won on 7A on scenario. But the point I want to touch on is, round three, got into a situation where I looked at the board and I had a baby Haley, four dug-in models and one, something that wasn't dug in next to baby Haley. And I'm pretty happy contesting the center circle because he needs nines to hit and I needed to make one of four tough checks, and he needs to roll like a 12 to kill baby Haley. All of that happens except for the tough checks, and afterwards I was a little tilted when I was like, well, that seems unlikely, and then I realized, you know, it's kind of my own fault, because I could have thrown models that are relevant, but less relevant than losing the game, into the zone. Things like Hitch. Hitch ran to 2 inches from the zone. And all too often people will end a game and go, well, I rolled poorly, I rolled really well, my opponent rolled really well, and not, I could have done this other little thing differently and been good. It also happened, my game with Anthony. Basic setup is we've got the two circle two flag scenario. Siege 2 is very, very fast. If you haven't played against him, get your local Signar player to drop him into you. I basically put Anthony's caster out of the game. I would conservatively say that turn 1A. Am I that far off, Anthony?
Talk about the Marc-Andre
yeah.
Leap.
Yeah, it's something that happened to me in the OTC. You cannot jump and charge. You can jump and run. And if you just forgo putting up spells, like everyone just assumes you do turn one, you're 15 inches up.
I did not know you could do that.
Yeah, me neither. And it's really cool. You can also drop a rocket turret and then run. So,
well, rocket turret specifically states, and it's an anytime. But I didn't think the rocket pack.
So is rocket pack.
No, rocket pack just says once per activation.
Yeah. So you do it and run. Yep.
Interesting.
And all of a sudden, Anthony looked at the building and went, "I have found where my caster is going to sit. It's outside the kill box, behind this building." And then he put two centurions on each side of it, and I proceeded to shoot a centurion off the board, which made me very happy. And at this point, I should have realized that my play is, because he literally couldn't get, I think you couldn't actually get to my flag to contest without really giving up a Centurion, I think was what it worked out to. Because it was deep. Basically, I was putting his Centurions on his side of the zone, and is how it was playing. Now, we discussed it later, and he would do some things differently. But turn three, I got into a position where I looked at the board, and I thought, I need my caster to do work. Now, if I had taken 2 minutes and looked at the board, I would have realized I was up by one. And at the end of the turn, I was going to be up by four. Because to avoid my stuff coming and fighting him, he had both of his Centurions in the zone by an inch, I believe. And I had two Express teams, a second shot from an Express team, and a angry Ironclad that was fully loaded within walking distance. So realistically, I should have just gone to four and tapped clock.
Right.
Instead, Siege went in and beat up half of a Centurion, and then I had a situation where I had two good outs. I can either buy and boost damage roll on another attack on Siege to finish off the Centurion I'm beating on, and then the other Centurion dies to an Ironclad, or I can Fury the Ironclad and he kills both of them, and I'm camping one inside a forest, and I'm in a good position. I chose to do neither. That was not a good call on my part, and I then got presented with a situation where I need to roll one of four columns to take out right arm or movement or cortex. So Siege had to go in and do a little bit of work, is what I thought, and it turns out I was incorrect. The better play would be to hide behind a forest and just push two jacks out the zone, score to four. So at that point, I committed Siege to going in. Siege beat up the Centurion, pushed it back a little bit so the Ironclad could go finish off one and a half Centurions. And at this point, I have four options. Option A is buy and boost another attack, probably get another chunk of health off between Ragman and Siege, and the Centurion in front of me ends up dying. Option B, Fury the Ironclad. It probably finishes off both of them with Ragman by itself. Option C is to trimmer the Ironclad so I can get harm out and get some guns going on and stuff like that. And option D is to just camp three and hope I don't die. Option D was the worst of the four. That's the one I went with. So we kill the Centurion in front of me. We leave the other Centurion with four columns heavily beat up to the point that I have a sniper that just needs to roll one of four different columns to take out right arm or cortex or movement. I chose to roll one of the other two columns because that's how that happens. And I left a perfect charge my caster, punch him in the face, make him quit wiggling his toes. And I failed at the tough check on the last attack Anthony had. So at the end of that game, I looked at it and went, well, that was dumb. And then I looked at it again and went, okay, Brent, here's all the different things you did wrong. I didn't knock down a jack. I put Siege in when I didn't need to. I didn't Fury and have the Ironclad do it. I didn't. Once I went in, I should have realized I was 100% committed to this play. Siege doesn't need to camp anything because it's irrelevant. All the little things like that. This was about game five with me for Siege 2, so I don't want to just say this was an experience, but it reminded me of early Striker 2 play. You think, I can do all this stuff, and you don't think in terms of, do I need to, or do I just need to score 3 points and pass clock? I'm just going to wrap up my next game, and then I'll pass it back to Anthony for his summary of it, but this followed me into my second game, or into my next game, which I think I felt a little gun-shy. I did the exact same thing against Zach Watson, super nice guy, and I looked at the board and realized I could get on Maddox with 4 focus on Siege. And I would boost an attack, I'd have a boosted damage roll, and I could buy 4 dice minus ones, and Maddox was camping 3. And I think I was still a little gun-shy for the last game, and I chose not to do that, and I 100% should have just gone into the game on 2A. One way or another, the game is over. Instead, I played into Firefly, Storm, Strider, Spam, and lost on 7? 6? Something like that. So, but I think the take-home lesson is look at your losses. Figure out, I mean, there are times when you can't change what you did. Or you can't change the fact that dice just decided to hate you. But usually there's probably something where if I had shifted this, if I had done this differently, I could have gotten this damage buff or this extra unit or just been 2 inches safer.
Yeah, I think a lot of people tend to, like you said, tend to look at the dice or look at, like, you get kind of, I forget the psychological term, but whatever happens when you look at, like, the last thing that happens, you know, you remember mm-hmm. the last thing of a presentation or whatever, instead of looking, like, of what may have happened the turn before, where you gave up that extra CP that put it in closing range for somebody, and I think you have to kind of have the ability, and I personally really, really struggle with this, to be able to go through, if not the whole game, at least, you know, 3 of the turns and be able to look at what you, oh, yeah, like you were saying, oh, if Hitch is running, why am I leaving him 1 inch outside the zone anyway? He's not doing anything else anyway if he's running. Like, why is he not in the zone? I think those are the little things that you have to be able to take a step back and look at instead of just being like, oh, I got diced, or, oh, I should have tried to kill your caster. Not that you should never look at it that. I just mean, I think that stuff tends to get lost a lot of times.
Yeah, and I definitely had those moments in Adepticon 2. You know, in Brent's game, I too looked at it and said, you know, I made it too easy for his express teams to push me out of zones. I was too timid around... because he has Fury, I was a little too timid around the commandos like walking up and hitting me instead of just digging deep in, realizing that they shoot just as well as they walk and hit in melee even with Fury.
Yep.
So like that was just a miscalculation, and that was a mistake I made where it's not enough to you get such in the habit of towing end zones because it's such an advantage when you have threat range on something to go toe in a zone that you forget that, look, when they have pushes and when they have things like TK and things like that, no, you have to be in that thing. You have to be so far in that they can't, you know, shenanigan you out. And that's a really important lesson to recognize the difference in the types of armies and how they're going to beat you on scenario.
Especially somebody like a Siege 2 with battering ram and or whatever he gets on his feet,
yep.
On the for the jacks plus express teams.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Brent, sorry.
I was like, and to be fair, I think if you're in the zone, Siege can make you not be in the zone, so.
Sure.
Just between battering ram, his hammer, and 3 express team shots.
Yeah, but making you spend those resources, yeah. You know, I agreed. Think is really important. And so, you know, that was one example. Another example is, you know, when you're looking at board sides, the value that a protected flag, you know, some of a flag that is protected by terrain is huge, and never discount that in particularly in spread the net, because it's such an important way to get tempo on your opponent. And so that was another mistake I made. And the third crucial takeaway mistake was that I forgot that my objective contests my own zone. And this was just a complete, you know, one of those things where I was tired. I was, you know, had played, it was the third game of the day, third day of the convention, and I missed it. My opponent missed it. And by the time either of us saw that he scored two control points more than he should have, he was already going for the win. And so there was no way to rewind that, and it wouldn't have been right to rewind it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just be really crisp on your scoring rules, because the scenario is so, so important in Mark III.
And real quick, there was a ruling from Dark Legacy that, yes, he can rock a pack and drop his turret before he runs. And I just wanted to clarify that, because I have a feeling we're going to get some questions. So.
Agreed. Because it's really good.
Yeah, but yeah.
In the right matchup, it's really, really good.
Yeah, but that is super legit. You can definitely do that.
Signar with all those weird rules interactions.
That's right.
So one of the things I found fascinating is that everybody, it seemed like a lot of people were very aware of Nemo 3. But I actually saw very few Nemo 3 being played. Brent, did you have that similar impression?
Yeah, I didn't see a whole lot of Nemo 3, but I saw an awful lot of Fireflies and Stormstriders, which is interesting.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I saw them with Maddox, obviously, and Champions. Jakes, Zach Watson had some pretty interesting Jakes tech. And it was cool to see the one takeaway. So one awesome Jake's tech that he had was, because her feat gives him parry, he uses Thunderhead, which is awesome because Thunderhead can just walk out of being engaged and just
so pulse good.
Over everything.
Yeah.
It was amazing. So I thought I'd share that, because I'm sure someone's going to have fun out there with that.
I mean, that's one way to make Thunderhead work.
I know. He was actually a problem. So Thunderhead, in our matchup, he was so obnoxious. I played Sloan against it, and an arcane shielded Thunderhead was so annoying that I eventually had to try to kill Jakes, because like I had eliminated almost everything else in the army. Attrition, you know, originally was going very, very well for me, and Thunderhead was just clawing back on attrition and was just killing everything I loved. And so I was like, okay, I just got to go for assassination. I can't let him do that anymore, because it was just too high armor, and everything you put near him dies. It was pretty amazing.
I actually, the first time I played Siege 2 with in Gravediggers, I went up against a guy playing Kane 3, and he was running Thunderhead. And I was like, all right, that seems weird. But then with Locomotion, he lets Thunderhead threat. He gives him a little threat extension. And I was like, I can't go anywhere on that side of the board, or he is just going to kill every single model that I have. Like, I just can't be over there.
You get a Firefly near, you know.
Yeah.
Those PAL 16 guns are pretty good.
Yep.
So. PAL 19 on his feet turn.
With Kane 3, sure.
Oh, yeah, but the parry was particularly nice, because a lot of times, you know, you put something threatening with free strikes on him, and then having him just walk away is terrible.
Yeah, that does.
And luckily, I recognized it right at the beginning. I looked at that, I'm like, wow, and Zach and I talked about it a little bit, I think even before the game started, and I was like, wow, that's really good tech. Like,
yeah. Yeah,
so that was fun to see.
That's super sweet that you guys got to play. I mean, it isn't, right? Like, you know.
Oh, I always enjoy good games.
Yeah,
it does.
And I think both of us learned a lot from that game. Mm-hmm. I mean, that and the two other times I played Siege 2 the weekend were really, really educational about how that caster works. You know, seeing him from that side, I haven't played him yet. That I've been working on other lists, and he's just one of the ones I haven't yet put the time and the reps in. But so it was really awesome to get a hammer's eye view as the hammer's coming down on my poor Jax.
Yeah. Do you guys have anything else from Adepticon, or do we want to get into that taking from losses? I think really could be its own episode, and I think that's something we can delve into later as just a general topic. Do you guys have anything else with Adepticon, or do we want to talk a little bit about the stuff we're thinking of bringing to the Sioux?
Let's move on to the Sioux.
Okay. So we have the Southern Ontario Open next week. Brent, unfortunately, is not going to make it to that. Maybe next year. That'd be sweet. But the three of us will all be there. The interesting thing about the Southern Ontario Open is that the Masters is a three-list format as opposed to the traditional two-list.
DNC 1.
Yes, but it is DNC 1 over the course of 2 days, assuming you make it to... So they cut to top eight and then carry on... So you don't have to play all three of your lists day one. You just have to have played them at some point throughout the entire tournament. Again, unless you don't qualify, then it doesn't matter. You could do whatever you want. So you guys probably have to worry about that. I'm just going to play whatever the fuck I want on day one and not worry about it.
I mean, oh, so they cut to top eight in the Masters?
Correct.
Oh, I didn't know that part.
That was how Adepticon was. So the nice thing there is, if you just always drop the best list you have, DSC is only relevant for, what, the last two rounds?
Yes.
Yeah, just play the game you're playing now and focus, because if you're trying to focus on the game of next game, then you're not going to really pay too much attention to the game you're playing then.
Yep.
And then if you lose and you're like, well, fuck, I should have played this match, because I can't even go to the next match now, because I just lost.
Yep.
So,
yeah, I played Sloan 4 times first day in Masters, and I didn't feel a bit bad about it. no, I mean, it's just, you know, I knew that in worst case, I get list locked into Cray for the final table. Okay. Okay with that.
Yeah, that means you're there, so that's fine.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a major con. If you're playing on final table, you're doing something right, you know, and that's the worst case if you're list locking, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I don't want to get into the actual thing about a three list, because again, I think that could be its own episode, but I want to just briefly talk about what each of us settled on and decided to bring. Cole, you weren't at Adepticon. You've been quiet most of this time, so I'm going to start with you. If you want to run through, you don't have to do the whole list if you don't want, just the three lists that you're bringing for Masters at the Sioux, and kind of why you settled on those three.
So for Masters, just as the top three lists right away, then will be Haley 3, Nemo 3, and Haley 2. I have right now. Back burner lists are like Striker 2 and like Siege 2, but those are more just like if I do like last minute chicken out. So Haley 3 is just the list I like to attrition with really well. I think she's going to be like the all-comer list I can probably play into most of the field. And I'm kind of with Brent on the idea of like Haley, Nemo 3 is kind of like weird, but I think he just like scares the matchups a lot. And he does put out a lot of damage. That cracks a lot of armor. And then Haley 2, I quite enjoy this list. I found that one Bones gun, and it has a lot of control that I feel like Haley 2 has brought back to the table.
Yeah, and that's the Hurricane Thorn double Centurion list, correct?
Yeah, Journeyman Charger and then like some mechanics.
Yeah. I like that list a lot, too. I haven't put it on the table, but that is in my queue of things to play. That list looks really nice.
I'm going to Dallas this weekend, so I won't have any practice with it, so I'm replaying two of my lists blind to the Sioux. I don't know how well that'll go, but hopefully I can still like pull some stuff
out. You're going to play Haley 3 every round anyway. Who are you kidding?
Yeah.
But the DNC 1...
Worry about that on day two for your last three rounds.
That's fair.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and go. So I think I've talked enough about the Siege 1 double strider list that I've been playing. I did settle with Trencher and Combat Engineers and Linus and Edria to go in that list just to give me two units to score. Linus and Edria are very difficult to remove from a zone if you can get them in there, so they can kind of go do their own thing. And then the Trencher Engineers actually do a surprising amount of work. They still have Rat 6, Pal 10 guns, and then they can just go sit in a zone and be dug in. So they're kind of a problem. That is my kind of all-comers list. It can't play into everything, but that's the list I'm generally I'm more comfortable with that I'm going to try to play into most things. And then I settled on, where's the other list? Striker 2, kind of pretty generic, Lancer, Rowdy, Rupert, Lattermore Jr. with a Firefly, double max Lances, and then Stormblades with UA. Haven't decided if I'm going to do the Stormblade Captain or Acosta. I kind of waver between the two. I don't know, Brent, maybe you can sell me on one over the other.
Captain. Yeah. Captain every time.
Yeah, that's...
So the Captain can hang out. So if you have Recon... Recon. The Captain can hang out with Lancer in one zone and camp a flag and be super survivable. And if they run to jam your... If, like, Satixis Raiders or... Gatorman Posse or something run to jam your lances. One unit of lances can charge through to clear off, and then you can charge past.
Right. Yeah, true. Yeah, I keep remaking that list, and I'm like, oh, but Acosta's def 15, and I can put him on a flag, and he can do some stuff. And then I go, oh, but Tactician and the Stormblade Captain. So I've gone back and forth. I think that's probably good. For my third list, I went for kind of an arm skew. I did a Striker 1 with a Stormwall. Two Fireflies, double Strider, Junior with a Charger, max mechanics. The reason I went Stormwall over Hurricane is because I really want this to play just into Haley, into Signar, so I can have Sniped Covering Fire to go down into the Haley 3 match, and into Nemo 3, I still have a Stormwall, and that is a problem. I originally had this list in Storm Division, but I think I lose a Firefly, and then I can take another solo instead, but I think the only thing I have to worry about there is Striker, and I think he just stays 4 inches, four and, you know, 1/16th of an inch behind anything else, and I don't think it's a problem, because everything else is immune to lightning, so I'm really not going to lose, I'm not worried about losing anything else into that match. So that's kind of just an arm skew push.
So how do you feel about having double Striders in two of your three lists?
I'm not souped about it, but again, I don't have to play ever, you know, I think they're good enough that it's fine. There's not so much if I'm super worried about something with lightning immunity. I mean, that's what the Striker 1 list is for anyway. The Striders can still go sit in a zone. I can keep one of them arcane shielded, and then on feet turn they're still arm 27. I think it's okay. I'm not yet super excited about it, but I think they're good enough that as long as I have another list like the Striker 2 list that's melee oriented, I think I can get away with it. I don't know. Would you guys be worried about that? About double Strider?
I think it puts you at a real disadvantage in the mirror. And I understand that Striker 1 can maybe power through with a Stormwall, but man, that's playing a lot of points down if they have a good... Because so one of the things I'm thinking... Do you mind if I just segue into mine?
No, please.
Obviously, my Sloan and my Cray, I've been putting in a lot of reps, and I'm going to keep those the same. And then the third list that I'm playing is a tweak to my Maddox list based off of what I saw, you know, from the other Signar players that I took some good ideas from Adepticon, and like from Brent's philosophy about the leaps into Haley 3 and the different things like that. And also, I think Tactical Tips brought up, you know, they were talking about Tom Guan's Nemo 3 list. And so just stealing a little bit of all those good ideas, I've altered my Maddox list to now have Squire and Stormwall, mm-hmm. Just one Strider, Arlen, a Captain, Kathy Lattermore, and double Lances. So the Stormwall, you know, being able to put pods into the clouds where you don't even need to put Lances in trouble in order to leap through is really, really nice. You have leaps from the Stormstrider and Kathy Lattermore, but it maintains Maddox's obnoxious hitting power. because you have the double lances and Kathy Lattimore and a Stormwall. And so against, you know, a lot of jacks, it's still really going to get the job done. And this is, you know, between this and Sloan, I should have an answer against the mirror. Because if they can handle Maddox, I think they're going to be weak to Sloan. And so something like this Maddox list is, or something like a Striker 2 list is what I really fear you're going to run into. And it's just going to be obnoxious for you.
Sure.
I'll be honest, in a 3 list environment, I would dig Kane 3 back out.
Okay.
Yeah. And that puts you in an interesting position where it's, I'm going to run 10 jacks at you, and I have 3 Shadowfires. So yeah. You need to kill them all right now.
Yeah, agreed.
Does he also have, like, Mage Sight as well?
He does.
So they ignore the Cloud Wall in a forest, so it's like you can't really hide behind anything but, like, a house?
No, ignore is a strong word, because he has to, it's in his control area. And that one of the dangers is that often gets him killed, so you got to be really, really cautious.
I'm talking like the Mage Sight on top of Shadowfire just leaves very little to hide from, right?
Correct.
Yeah. That's so good.
And so that, in terms of heavy metal, I mean, could also be a thing. So
the other list I did toy around with Striker 1 was taking Hurricane Stormwall and then one Stormstrider. But I got, like, no support, and I didn't think I liked that. I mean, it pushed the arm skew, like, up to 11, but I wasn't sure how I felt about not having the extra support pieces.
I think that it's, like, drops your scenario score down to, like, a 0 almost.
Yeah, but that would be the other thing I considered just for pushing, just having that third list with some type of skew just to do something else that presents a question that someone has to go, oh, well, fuck, I don't want to see that list. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
So that's next week. Super excited for that. I'm sure we'll all play against each other and knock each other out, and that'll be great.
That would be terrible.
I don't want to knock Signar out. I get knocked out by Signar.
It was so sad. It was so sad to play. I mean, it was cool to get to meet more Signar players, obviously, but, you know, it was because someone made a post on Facebook afterwards where they were like, oh, man, you know, we didn't really do well as a faction at Adepticon. And I actually thought we did fine just in terms of the games and how they went and what I saw and what people were scared of. But it was, you know, we had a lot of Signar on Signar matchups. I mean, I played 4 games out of 10 against Signar. Brent, I know you played at least 2. Did you play more than that against Signar?
No, not day 1.
Well, I'm just saying in both terms, yeah. Things combined.
Yeah, I was trying to think back. I don't think I did.
Okay. But you had 2 in the same tournament in Champions.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and so it's just like that in a format where you need to go undefeated to make the cut or near it, you know, or get lucky with your strength of schedule, it's really hard to represent your faction when you keep getting mirrors.
yeah, that's true. All right, guys. Well, I think we went a little over an hour, so I think we'll call it for this week. We'll do a cast not next week. We'll do the one after that, so that'll be after the Sioux. We'll try to give some recaps of that and maybe talk about some lessons that we took away from that meta and what we want to change with some of our lists going forward. If you have any ideas for topics, you can find us on Facebook and shoot us a message, anything you want to hear us talk about. And Brent, thanks for coming on and being a part of this with us, man. Really excited to have more talks with you going forward.
Thanks for having me. It's been great fun.
Yeah, all aboard the Signar train, boys.
Well, not thanks for having me. You're a member. I just mean thanks for joining with us.
Absolutely.
So, all right. For all of us, I'm Grant.
I'm Anthony.
I'm Cole.
I'm Brent.